On this installment of the Dunk Tank, Dunkelman hits the residual check lottery. Chet comes over for a romantic evening of Sharknado, and comedian and radio legend Frazier Smith talks about emceeing the nights of the Michael Richards and Daniel Tosh incidents and how you know you've made it when people start to hate you. Dunk. Dunk. We have no idea what we're doing.
Who needs that?
Hi, Chet.
Hey, Brian.
It's good to see you again.
Yeah, long time.
It has been a long time.
Since 2 a.m. Saturday.
I know. Chet was, we spent so much time.
We really did.
Talking about my dysfunction and my emotional problems. Sometimes I forget about your emotional problems, Chet, with a young man just moving out here to Los Angeles, cold and frightened.
Well, I feel like I'm doing...
Naked and Afraid.
Have you
seen that show?
No.
Oh, I'm in. Naked and Afraid.
That's a real thing?
It is a real thing.
What is that?
They drop people off, and they're naked, and then they get scared.
Yeah, your last television recommendation to me was watching Sharknado.
Sharknado, everybody!
Which we got halfway through, and then you went to sleep, so...
So, Chet wanted to do something Saturday night, and I'm like, you know, I have a kid, and some weekends are tough. I said, let me wait until the wife goes to sleep, put the kid away, and... So at 10 o'clock, I text Chet, and he immediately jetted right over at 11:30. Thanks for hurrying over, Chet.
Of course.
Really appreciate that, buddy. Anyway, we had a nice little chat outside under the stars, ate some pizza. So then we watched a nice little hour of Sharknado, and I haven't finished it. I'm dying to know how it ended.
Pretty terrible.
Yeah, terrible. By terrible, you mean awesome.
I think you were getting annoyed that I was talking during the movie, and that's the type of movie... You're supposed to talk over
just,
the whole thing.
You know, whenever you talk, I find it annoying. No, I'm kidding. But a little bit. You're a little loud with an infant.
Well, that's why my mind. Your infant was sleeping.
Yeah, upstairs.
Yeah.
Sound carries.
That's...
So, speaking of my infant, I just came from my six-month pediatrician appointment, and I'm proud to say that my little preemie, my little 4-pound, 14-ounce boy, is now a whopping 15.3 pounds.
Wow.
He is in the 10th percentile and has skyrocketed to the 73rd percentile in length, which makes no sense at all. I'm 5'8". My wife is 5'1 and 3 quarters. He is going to be 6'4 at this rate.
I just want to congratulate you for not making a dick joke right there.
A dick joke. Nah, I'm not on stage.
All right.
Save it for the stage.
Save it for the stage.
So anyway, everything's good. He got his shots, which is always fun. But I want to talk about you. I want to make sure you're okay.
Is this why we didn't do any prep? So you could just ask?
I got nothing. I got the kid, went to the doctor, and then I have nothing.
Have you listened to the last couple episodes and realized, like, wow, we've really been getting into my head on that?
That's the thing. I want to deflect again about my emotional problems.
Now I need to not... progress anymore. I need to stop the growth, if not take a step backwards and pretend that I care about Chet when really it's just avoiding.
It's just that I was worried about you Saturday night, and at 2:30 I was like, Chet, you gotta get the fuck out of here, and I feel like we cut it short.
I didn't want to watch. We talked about watching Sharknado, but then we shot the shit for 2 hours. I honestly didn't want to start Sharknado and was glad when you were ready to go to bed.
Oh wow. Now the truth comes out.
The truth hurts, Brian.
You just wanted to stay outside under the stars.
Yeah, that sounds more romantic than it was.
How's your head?
What does that even mean?
I don't know. You okay?
Yeah. I had a phone interview for a job today.
Really?
And they called me, and it's like, hello, hello, and they can't hear me. And I have to keep my cool. I can't be like, can you fucking hear me? You know, because maybe they can hear me. And
job interview, rule number one, don't say fuck.
Yeah, that's a big one. And then, so they called me back again, and still something was wrong. I didn't know if it was their phone or my phone. Then I called them back, clearly not working. So I called one of my friends who's on Facebook. I'm like, can you hear me on my phone? He's like, nope. I'm like, my phone's never not worked like this. So it stops working. I had phone calls earlier in the day. It worked fine. So my phone stops working when I'm supposed to have this job interview. Maybe that's a sign that I shouldn't be getting a real job.
That's it. You know what? People said you got to have something to fall back on. But when you don't have something to fall back on, the desperation, the fear, and outright terrifying desperation motivates you to succeed, Chet Wild.
Look how it
worked out for me.
I got an email from my parents, and in that email, Not only did they discourage me, or maybe discourage isn't the right word, push me to reconsider comedy as a career, but also in that same email told me I need to laugh more.
Aww.
So, hey, don't do comedy, but laugh more.
You're like the sad clown.
I am.
Your parents think you're the sad clown.
I feel like
it's
I'm doing
good to have
though.
Support. But you know what? Someday they're going to be old and they're going to be in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's like my mother, and she doesn't even know what the fuck I do. She was excited because one time she saw me in a commercial. That's all I need. I made it. I was in a commercial, Chet Wild.
Does she watch Friends reruns and sees you on and is like, oh, Brian's doing well. He's on the new TV show.
No, Mom, that's Chandler. That's Chandler.
No, you were on Friends.
I was on Friends.
I did a podcast.
The one with
week,
the ring.
And people.
Checks keep coming. By the way, let's. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it was mentioned I do a podcast with Brian Dunkelman, and the guy's like, Brian Dunkelman from Friends?
The seventh. You mean Brian Dunkelman, the seventh friend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not American Idol. There you go.
Speaking of residual checks, you know, every once in a while, you win the mail lottery. And you see, you know, you always see it's from the Screen Actors Guild / After Union now, because they've combined for maximum power. Well, Chet, over the weekend, Saturday, seven checks in the mail. Oh, happy day. Let's open them. It's like Christmas morning. Boom, 5 cents. Second one, boom, 5 cents. Do you know how the story ends?
5 cents.
Seven checks for 5 cents. That's 35 cents for you math whizzes out there. That's less than the cost of a stamp. Keep up the good work, SAG-AFTRA. Appreciate it. Working for me.
What were they for?
Celebrity Fit Club.
All of them?
All of them.
Were they residuals for that picture they're using to advertise upcoming season?
That's restitution.
Oh, speaking of terrible pictures, we got some fan mail, Brian.
No, we didn't.
We got fan mail.
I don't believe you for a second. Is this a bit?
You
got to run all bits by me.
Not a bit, because somebody, without me prompting it, legitimately sent this picture for you.
What picture?
And I feel like that's a segue. It's a reference to our show, and I think you're
going to visual comedy works great for podcasts, Chet Wild.
I'm going to put the picture on our website.
Oh, well, there you go.
So people, if they want to go to the website and look at it.
Are you going to show it to me?
There it is. See, that's a positive reaction.
I love it.
Somebody photoshopped Brian with Cousin Larry on Perfect Strangers.
You know what? It's like it's like looking like Siamese twins right
there. Yeah, now that I see it, you guys really do look the same.
Yeah, we look exactly the same.
So that's from our listener, Jason, in Wellsville, New York.
Jason from Wellsville.
That's towards Ellicottville.
Yeah, I used to play in the Penn York.
Yeah, you guys can go hang out when you're home next week.
That's fantastic. Speaking of fan mail, I got, oh my God, like a month and a half ago, I haven't gotten around to it. Big fan of mine in Poland. Yeah, you heard me. I'm huge in Warsaw.
Move over, Wichita.
Yeah. Can I please trouble you for a headshot? And I'll get around to that. I don't know how much postage is to Poland.
Send them
it might
this
be a little
headshot.
Pricey. Well, now that I got those seven residual checks.
You can almost afford
maybe,
one stamp.
Maybe. I can't even send anything to Santa Monica, let alone Poland. All right, we've talked enough.
Okay.
I'm really excited about our guest. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and call him a Los Angeles radio legend. K-Rock, K-L-O-S, anything with a K. He's a very, very funny stand-up comedian, and he's my friend. And I tell you, he's the kind of guy that when I'm out, no matter how shitty a mood I'm in, which is often, if I see this guy, I feel good about myself. I feel powerful. I feel encouraged.
You've referenced it on occasion. He
right?
calls you a donkey, and
that's
then
it.
You get happy.
It's it. He's here. Frazier Smith, everybody. We're still
we're
clapping?
We're clapping.
We're both going to clap.
We're doing the clapping as
they
walk to the table.
Very nice, guys.
Doing the slow walk. There you go. Nobody's good. Did you turn the camera on, by the way, Chet?
Oh, it's not even on. All right. I thought I was getting
How's
some camera
going, buddy?
Here.
It's good
Hi,
to
Ducky.
See you.
How are you, buddy?
I'm great.
Nice to see you, Chet.
Hey, Frazier. How are you?
How are you, bud?
Good to see you.
Now, you guys met at the Comedy Magic Club?
Yeah,
is that...
man. He was nice enough to, you know, watch over me while I was watching my team win. We won.
Yeah, it was Michigan-Syracuse, and I'm from Western New York, so I had to find the new guy at the club, so I can't.
So
root
he
too
really
hard
root,
for
yeah.
the other team. I have right. to play. Yeah, Michigan's good. Sure.
That's why I'm getting him a spot there. I'm going to hook him up for that.
All right, you and Steve Fantastic. Wilson can battle out for who gets me the spot
Come
first.
Come on, we'll get you in there.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, man.
It's the big summer anniversary. It's like 30 comics a night.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been down to that?
I hope to this week.
Yeah, that's a great club, isn't it?
Do you the last time I've been down there was the other 10-year anniversary. 10 years ago, I think, was the last time I was there. What year is it this? 30, 35,
is
right?
It? Okay.
35, so yeah. I was there at the 25.
It matches the money you got from your residuals.
There it is.
So there's something going on.
Yeah, it's in the air.
Well, we got to get you down there. You would kill down there. You are so good now, man.
Oh, that's really
like
nice.
Like the other night at the Ice House, he was out there, and he was sweating it out because there were so many people on the bill. And you know, when you get to one of those nights where there's like 20 guys or whatever it was, you know, the audience is starting to get tired.
Sure. That's a lot of comics.
And you were like, okay, what is going to happen? And then you killed.
Oh, that's very nice. Let's tell the truth. That's my poker night, though.
Oh, right.
If I'm not up in the first three comics, I'm
out of
here because I got
to
hurry up and lose
money.
And
this is the same set we've talked about a couple episodes ago, right?
Yeah,
where you killed, but then there was still.
Set. Well, you know.
We don't have to relive it.
We've got a voucher.
Yeah, we do have a voucher.
I didn't get real good feedback.
That's two guests in a row giving you a lot of good feedback.
I don't know what the deal is.
I don't get that because it was one of the best sets I've seen.
That's really nice.
You know, I see them all out there. So that was a really...
You're there all the time.
You crushed, dude.
That's very nice of you.
I think the guy we're talking about, who we won't mention, but sometimes these bookers don't always get what's good. You know, it's funny, another comic that you may know, and he's a young comic, and he had an unbelievable set out there at that same club.
Mm-hmm.
Not that night. It was another night. And he got weird feedback, too. The guy said to him, the booker said to him, you know, you were walking around in circles while you were doing your set. That was his comment.
Made
his
him dizzy.
Only comment, and he destroyed.
Yeah.
Why not say, hey, you did great, but why were you walking around in circles?
Yeah.
You know?
And who cares?
Who cares?
You don't have to be stationary.
No, there's no rule about that. So I didn't really get that feedback. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think this guy has a reputation for weird feedback.
I've heard that, too. But, you know, listen, you know, not everybody's going to like you. That's
and sometimes people in those positions, there are people that try to be artists or they're shadow artists, so to speak, who wish they could do that and get their satisfaction of tearing people down, thinking in their head they could do it better.
I just love the club.
It's a great club.
It's the best.
It's a great club.
I mean,
it's hard to top
one of the best
club.
I've ever been.
Hard to top that one.
Yeah.
And the other one's good, too. That Comedy Magic's good, too.
Yeah, it's the way they treat comics is incredible. I don't think you'll get any negative feedback there, Brian.
They'd love you there. And I just go down for the food. Most people do.
It's
at
incredible.
A comedy club. It's the best comedy club food.
Now I haven't been there that often. You know, 10 years ago I was there a few times, and before that, but I used to go to I believe it was called the Lighthouse, which is across the street,
right?
Where they did the little every week they had a comedy contest,
right?
Voted on by the audience. So you do your set, and then they make you all go up on stage and stand there, like, okay, let's keep it good. How about comic number one?
I hate that.
And you know, you'd go up and chew it, and like one person like. And at first place was $100, second place $20 bar tab, third place a piece of pizza.
Oh, nice.
I never once got the goddamn pizza. Not
never
even
got
the pizza. No, I didn't.
Wow. That's humiliating. I hate those contests.
Now, have you been – what were some of the worst shows that you've been? Have you done all of them in L.A. when you first started? How long have you been doing stand-up, by the way?
About 26 weeks. 26 years. About 26 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the usual weird gigs. I mean, we've all had a million of them. It's kind of hard to remember which ones were worse than others, mm-hmm. but because there have been some really weird ones. But I think my weirdest was probably the Kramer incident.
Oh, you were there that night.
Were
you hosting that night?
I was the host of that show.
Oh, my God.
So that was probably the ugliest I've seen. And I've seen some pretty ugly stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, I did a New Year's Eve show out in Palmdale, and I brought all the comics out, and it was the... the next day were all the bowl games, but they have some games the night before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they wouldn't turn off the games.
I've done those gigs before.
Right? And it's a bar gig, and they got the games on, and no one was watching us.
Yeah.
People are actually angry that you're doing
comedy.
Oh,
they were pissed that we were wrecking the game for them. And I'm a sports fan. I would have been pissed, too.
Sure.
But, you know, that was an ugly one. And all the comics were like, really, dude? And I couldn't get the owner to turn off the games. He goes, well, these are my customers. I go, well, then why'd you have a show?
Yeah, wait till the games are over.
Yeah. So then, but we've all done those kind of gigs. But the Kramer one was an extra, that had an extra vibe that was weird.
What did you do when you went back, when you had to go back up?
Well, first of all, I didn't want to go back up. I was standing in the back. Standing in the back, right? And it was funny because Sinbad walked in, who I hadn't seen I don't think anybody had seen him in like 10 years. Where was Sinbad? So he comes walking and he goes, Fraze, is this the kind of stuff that happens at this club now? And I go, no. I go, this was particularly.
You want to go up right
weird.
Now?
Yeah, no, but, right, if you want to do a spot. So but then somebody goes, dude, you got to go up there. And I'm like, what? And they go, yeah, you're the host. You still got, and everyone's filing out. The entire crowd's filing out.
Wow.
So I had to fight the wave of people filing out to get up there. Mm-hmm. The next comic was Jim Gaffigan. And I go, Jimmy, I'm bringing you up. He goes, oh, no, you're not. By the way, the whitest human being in the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
He's see-through.
So, right? So then he goes, okay, you got to do time, man. And so I go up there. I'm like, I didn't know what to say. So I go, sorry about that, folks. That's all I could think of. Sorry about that, folks.
Sure.
And then that's what made it on the demo. You know, a second later, I said, you know, I think we just saw Kramer morph into Mel Gibson, because it was like a week after the Mel Gibson thing. But that got a laugh. But sure. When I said, sorry about that, folks, I totally looked confused. And then that was what made it on the YouTube thing. It was like everybody saw me come up and say that.
Right.
So then people were coming up to me for like months going, sorry about that, folks.
It's your catchphrase.
You know, but which it did become. And
how did he end that set?
Not well.
No, he didn't take himself out of that hole.
You know what? He really didn't know what to do. He kind of was like up there, was kind of going back and forth. And then the one guy goes, I want everyone out of this club now. So everyone listened to the guy, which I guess they should have. They all started filtering out. And he was on stage just trying to still make something out of it.
Wow.
And he finally realized that wasn't going to happen. And people were yelling stuff at him and throwing stuff at him. And I thought chairs were going to start flying. It was actually not as bad as I thought it was going to get. So then he had a lucky break. He ran up the stairs at Laugh Factory, and he caught a window just before the crowd started coming down. So they would have happened.
Yikes.
So then he hid up in the offices, in the owner's offices upstairs for a while. And then he wanted to go out and apologize out front because everybody was out front.
Oh, just boy.
It was like a mob scene.
Sure.
And he goes, I'm going out to apologize. We go, no, you're not, because he would have gotten torn apart. So he came back down about an hour or so later, jumped in his limo, and took off.
I wonder how differently it would have played out, even if people wanted to tear him apart, if there was video of him legitimately, sincerely apologizing immediately after.
Well, you know, that's another thing. I mean, I don't know how that would have gone. I don't think people were in the mood to hear it at that point.
No, there's too much damage already.
You know, and it was just an ugly night. The odd things about it are that it actually helped the Laugh Factory big time.
Oh, sure.
You know, it put their logo on the map worldwide, and that they're more popular than ever because of that incident. And mm-hmm. I think the owner, Jamie, thought it was going to end his club. That night, he was really depressed. Yeah. You know, 2 weeks later, he's like, yeah, man.
It's a commentary on our times, isn't
it? Yeah,
well, it is. There was a plant there for a while. I don't know if there still is. There's a TMZ source with the Laugh Factory.
There probably has been
since that incident.
There probably has been, and there probably is. You know, I was there, unfortunately, hosting on all those things. I was there when Tosh did the
you were?
The rape thing, which was actually not... Tosh didn't do anything wrong there. You know he has a sense of irony.
And not being there, I could tell that guy.
You know Tosh. He's very
exactly.
clever.
Sure.
And he's not ever saying anything truly mean. He's just being ironic.
And it got a
laugh. Which you're very good at.
It got a laugh.
Yeah, and it got a laugh. And nobody's going to support rape.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was doing that. He was making a crazy joke. And everyone in the room got it except this one woman who seemed like she didn't want to get it.
Sure.
You know, and she jumped up and said, well, I'm leaving. And then her friend who was with her didn't even want to go. The friend was like, well, I'm staying, you know, her girlfriend. So obviously she was the only one upset. Mm-hmm. And then on the way out, he made a crack like, wouldn't it be funny if she got raped on the way out of here? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a tagline.
That's a totally legitimate thing to say, given that you're on the defensive.
Yeah, and it was obviously he didn't mean that.
Of course
not. Anyone in the world got that. But it's all over the internet the next day. And then next thing you know, Tosh is getting hassled by some of his sponsors and all this stuff. And, you know, I have a nose for that. For some reason, I'm always there for that weird stuff.
Let us know when you're hosting that.
I think I'm the TMZ plant, maybe. But, you know, it was like the Kramer thing was odd, too, because they asked me to go on all these things like CNN and uh-huh. everything and talk about it. And I'm usually a publicity whore like the rest
sure,
of us,
why
you
not?
Know. But I didn't want to do that because he was already getting piled on.
Sure.
Why go on there and bash a guy so I get publicity? So
right.
I turned them all down. Which a lot of people thought were stupid. My manager thought I was an idiot. Well, dude, come on, man. You're on national TV for all this. And everyone wanted to talk to me.
Right.
But I just thought, you know what? The guy, as wrong as he was, which he was totally wrong, it's pretty indefensible, he was always nice to me.
Well, that's the
so
thing.
So I didn't want to go on and bash the guy.
You don't want to capitalize on somebody else's misfortune.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You know, and I even talked over to the pastor at my church, and he goes, don't do that. He goes, that's a mistake to capitalize, like you just said, to try to get PR off of somebody else's problem. So I just didn't do it.
Now, you weren't there the night I had my incident. There is something about the Laugh Factory.
Every club you have an incident. Ayo!
I don't get that because you're such a good guy. I don't get that.
It really is.
Yeah, I don't get that.
That's bullshit.
Dunkey, everyone loves Dunkey.
Oh, what happened there? There's my show. Everybody loves Dunkey.
Come on, man.
Except Chet. I don't know if I've talked about that. I'm sure I have, but it was a long time ago. Who cares? I was doing a set. Second time I'd ever tried this joke, and this is how long ago it was. This is verbatim what I said. I read that book, The Secret. You probably know the premise by now. If you really want something to happen badly enough, all you have to do is truly believe that it'll happen, and it will. I don't know. I'm skeptical. Because I read that book like 6 months ago, and Ryan Seacrest, still AIDS-free.
No.
I'm just kidding. He totally has AIDS. Thank you, Secret. Now, it got a really good laugh.
Right.
I had a really good set.
Sure.
Now, the next morning, my wife called me and said, you're the lead story on TMZ right now. I said, what? And I went on. The headline is Brian Dunkelman goes on a vicious tirade and says that if wishes came true, Ryan Seacrest would have AIDS.
Oh, come on.
Now, as a comedian, my first reaction was I was incredibly insulted because that's not what I said. That's not a joke. It's not funny. It's not a statement. What I said was obviously a joke, and it created quite a big problem for me.
And they didn't even include the tag where you said you'd be the one that gave it to him.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, see, that was the tag that would have saved it. You know, the thing about it is that's exactly what happened to Tosh. Same thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem when you take stuff out of context and also you take things out of the room because there's that sense of irony. You can't put quotations around irony. And obviously in a comedy room, that's what you're doing. You know, you're not making a public statement.
Sure.
You're making a joke. And if you wanted to be that way about it, you could get Leno or Letterman or any of those guys on any day of the week.
Take anything out of anybody's act and take it out of context.
Because they say stuff that's pretty close to being,
exactly.
You know, even on national TV, you hear stuff all the time. And so I think that's crazy, and I think that's probably what I don't like about the TMZ world is that, you know, if there's a legit story, okay, that you want to deal with celebrities, fine. But if you're twisting stuff and taking stuff out of context and all that, you can really hurt somebody's career.
Yeah.
And what's the point of that?
The thing that made me the most sad about the whole situation is that in the story, and I'm not going to mention the name, but it said later on in the show, comics that were actually funny came up and got the crowd back, and including fill in the blank, and then there was a link to his website. Now, explain that to me. He wasn't the guy on after me, but I walked out and while I was going to get my car, I saw said comic and I went to say hey to him. He was on the phone and he just looked really weird at me.
Right.
Am I crazy for thinking that he has a connection at TMZ and saw it as an opportunity?
Found
real,
your point.
Real good chance.
It really makes me sad that a fellow comic would do that.
Real good
but
chance.
I don't know if it's true or not, but you know, and I met with a publicist, and they're like, "Don't ever mention it again."
Well, that's what
don't
you do.
Don't ever say it.
That's
again.
What you
but
do.
You're admitting guilt. Silence is an admission of guilt.
Well, we feel you that know? Way. You know what? But the publicist is right. One
they
thing I've seen
right.
is if you drop it, it'll go away.
Yeah.
And that's except for the thing with Kramer, that was a hard one to drop.
Oh, man.
Because too many people saw it. But in your case, if you drop it, it'll fade. And there was a recent case of that where Dane had a thing in Boston. Mm-hmm. And he was doing the Boston Strong thing where they were raising the money for the victims of the explosions.
Uh-huh.
And it was at the Garden, and there were a lot of big people on the event. And the only two comics were Stephen Wright and Dane. But and they're Boston guys, of course. And then they had, you know, Aerosmith was on there, Jay Giles Band, a lot of big bands. So Dane is going out on tour soon. So they asked him if he would be part of the live feed, and he said, "No, I would prefer not to, because I really don't want to expose that material before I go out on a tour," which is a legitimate thing for a comic to say. But what happened was apparently then they just left his portion blank, so it went to black during his thing, and then a lot of people thought it was over, turned off, and missed Aerosmith. So people were furious at Dane, you know,
other people were just mad that he held his material. The way they viewed it was like, oh, you can't show your material.
What are you, a prima donna kind of thing? And people are always looking to kind of bash him anyway.
Sure.
these days for whatever reason. I'm a fan of his, but
I am too.
You know, and I think he's talented, really talented. But, you know, people who do what they do. So anyway, he was, I'm sure, very down about that. And I sent him a text saying, hey, don't worry, that'll blow over. Just don't talk about it. Because that's his hometown. He didn't want everybody in his hometown being mad at him.
Sure.
But, you know, again, that's the internet fanning something that I think is fairly trivial.
Yeah.
Why make such a big deal about that?
That's a completely legitimate thing to not want your new material to be seen.
If you're going out on tour, sure, absolutely. You know. And, you know, I think he's taken about enough abuse. I stick up for the guy because he's taken a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
And he doesn't deserve it. And what I think about stuff like that is that, you know, that's just internet people looking for problems.
Mm-hmm.
When I was, you know, on the radio, it was the snail mail days. And I remember I would hate it if a letter got, because I got bags of mail that were positive,
sure.
But if one got through to my program director from some, you know, blue-haired bat living in a trailer out in the desert,
right.
You know, he would weigh that as much as 100 positive things.
Yep.
You know, that's how bosses tend to be. Because,
mm-hmm.
Uh-oh, look at this. And I'd be in the office the next day trying to explain it. Well, look, this lady said that you were crazy and you said this and blah, sure. blah, blah. And, you know, all of a sudden you're fighting for your job over some knucklehead
mm-hmm.
who doesn't really represent your audience or necessarily anyone who's sane.
It would take so little energy to just not listen anymore than it would to sit down, write a letter, send it out. It's just...
And they don't
that at least took effort. You know, the internet now, people don't need to put in any effort. They don't have to put on pants and go outside to do that.
See, that's exactly. And that's the other thing that makes it worse, though. Because it's easier, more people send in the negative stuff. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to David Lee Roth one time because he, you know, I helped launch that band way mm-hmm. back in the day. I launched a lot of bands.
Yeah.
And David's been a friend for a lot of years. And you know, I said to him, when did you first know you were getting famous? And he goes, when we started getting hate mail, because that was a sign that they were getting, you know, enough of an audience. See, no one cares until you get to a certain level.
Sure.
That was the same with Dane. Dane reminded me, hey, I came to the Laugh Factory for 10 years and nobody cared if I came or went
mm-hmm.
before he made it big. Nobody said anything to him. But when he got big, that's when they start taking pot shots. And mm-hmm. that's when people take pot shots at anybody, a band, anybody. And it's just easier today, like you said, Chet, to do that.
Now, so if you're getting hate mail, it means you're making it. What does it mean if people Photoshop
like
a picture
Justin?
Of you on the Perfect Strangers?
You know, I'm not sure where to what
that's
that
love to me. That's
I
nothing
guess
but
that's love.
Love.
I guess that's fine.
Because I this is referencing previously somebody after a show came up to me and said, you know who you look just like? Cousin Larry from Perfect Strangers, which I've never heard that before. Just the other night at the Improv, somebody came up to went out of his way to come up to me and said, you know, you look just like a young Jamie Masada. Do
oh
you
my
get
God.
That a lot?
Oh, no. You should have said, yeah, buddy, I do. Listen,
so
listen.
Let's crop Mark Lynn Baker next to Jamie Masada.
I think that's love, though. Right there.
That is love.
You know, that's not.
Sorry, you're not going to make it until pictures are sent with hate, Brian.
No, Justin from Lovesville, he's okay.
Well, that's a lot. That's a hard lesson to learn is that when no matter what level of fame you attain, you are going to be attacked.
Well, that is a tough lesson. But, you know, I think it's something that that I was able to maybe give some comfort to Dane about because mm-hmm. I was like, well, listen, these people are coming after you. They're only coming after you because you're doing well.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about. But when I, you know, I went to broadcasting, you know, I was a communications major. I was in the same class with Tim Allen. We went to mm-hmm. Western Michigan, you know, and we had a really good teacher. This guy was an ABC director for years. So he really, it was a good class. But they never tell you what you're going to face when you really get out there.
Right.
And what I found was that when I got big on the radio, and I got pretty big, I was like Howard Stern big,
sure.
I started getting all kinds of weird stuff from management, too, that I didn't expect. I didn't expect my management to come after me and try to trip me up, try to mess with the show. I was number one, and they would come out there and try to, no, we're going to change this, and we're not going to do this, and they'd start dictating to you about guests. And,
but isn't that about their own need for control?
Well, I'm sure it is.
Right.
And I was probably too young to get that. And I probably
should have. How old at the time?
I was mid-20s. Oh, and I probably should have shut my mouth. I probably just should have. You know, I learned to be more diplomatic as I got older.
Yeah.
Or be more diplomatic. And I was diplomatic. I was diplomatic to a point.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember they would say stuff like, I remember Cher was doing the show across the hall, and she said, well, I want to do Fraser's show. And they go, no, you can't have Cher on there. I go, why not? And they go, well, she's not rock and roll. I was on a rock station. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, I don't care. She's Cher.
Yeah, Cher.
Yeah.
You know, and that was when she was at her peak.
Sure.
Okay, and they would do stuff like that. They would say, well, you can't have this person on. I remember I was on another station, and I wanted to have Ozzy and Sharon on. Mm-hmm. And Ozzy and Sharon were friends of mine. I'd had Ozzy on my show for years, and they were at the peak of their show. So I said, well, I want to have Ozzy on tomorrow. And the guy goes, no, program director. I go, well, why not? And he goes, he's not mass appeal. He's, you know, if this was a metal station, fine. But this isn't. And I go, wait a minute. I go, they've got the number one show on cable right now. I go, did you see today's newspaper? And he goes, no. So I showed him the LA Times. On the front page was Sharon and Ozzy shaking hands with Bush. They were at the White House. I go, is that mass appeal enough for you? So what does the guy do? He turns on his heels and storms out of the room. I'm fired 2 days later.
Are you kidding?
Because of that?
Yeah. Well, because
at that
everywhere. I kept pushing him on things like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't that specific incident, but I would push him on stuff. I'd say, well, wait a minute. Why can't I have this guy on? Why can't I? They got mad because I had Dice on. Mm-hmm. And they go, why are you having Dice on? And I go, because Dice is a professional. He's not going to necessarily do dirty material, and he didn't.
Yeah.
He talked the whole time about he's an expert on gangster movies from the past. He knows all the Edgar G. Robinson, all the gangster movies, and he knows everyone in them, and he knows the plots.
Huh.
And he can talk endlessly without being dirty.
Of course, he's playing a character.
Exactly.
Obviously, he's melded into it
over
the years.
And they're out there like this, looking through the window at me like this, like you know, like don't slip up.
Yeah.
And you know, I had to fight that constantly. So there's something that I never knew from, you know, broadcasting class that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a good lesson to learn because I didn't know how to handle it.
Sure. Well, I mean, nothing can prepare you for what happens.
And I would
get
into beefs and you know, I at a certain point, it got contentious.
Mm-hmm.
And with one guy, I finally told everybody in town to flip him off. I gave out his – he had these two hip license plates. That was my slogan, two hip. So he got these two hip license plates. So I said, if you see a silver Cadillac with two hip license plates, he had the only ones in town, flip him off. So people were flipping him off everywhere he went, at every stoplight, everywhere. So he was, like, getting really mad at me. And so he was pulling stuff on me. And I kept pulling little stuff like that back and forth on him.
Mm-hmm.
So finally I had written a movie script with this guy, Jack Handy. I don't know if you remember Jack Handy.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the new book coming out.
Yeah, Deep Thoughts with mm-hmm. Jack Handy. And Jack Handy wrote a couple of movies with Steve Martin, and the studios had put me with him to write a movie. And we had written this movie, and it had gotten picked up.
Hmm.
So I went on the air because it was really getting to the point where this guy was grinding me at every turn. So I went off on a little rant. And what you would do in a blog today, I did on the air on the biggest station in town. And I said, you know what? I go, I you guys don't know this, but my manager here has been really a jerk to me. I go, this guy at every turn, I started telling the whole story.
Sure.
And I go, this guy, I go, but I won't be needing him much longer. You know why? Because I just signed a movie deal. They're going to make a movie out of my script. I'm going to be in the movie. I start going off on this whole thing, and I hear this pounding on the glass. Well, I'm doing this, and it's my news guy, and I'm waving him off, like, get out of here. I'm in the middle of my rant. And he keeps pounding, and I look over, and he's holding up the L.A. Times, and it says, studio head fired.
No.
The guy that had given me the deal the night before got fired. So all of a sudden, my deal's in turnaround.
Right.
I mean, I got paid for one draft, but the whole thing never went. I couldn't believe the timing on that.
Your terrible, big moment.
Terrible timing. I was telling this guy off, and then I wasn't going to need him anymore. And so, you know, that's another job.
You can't delete that like a blog. That's out there.
Yeah. So I got fired on that one, too. Maybe I deserved that one. You know, maybe. But
has to be tough with, like, your first story of getting fired there. With, one, it's your job on air to be controversial and push buttons to kind of switch modes when you're there at the station, then you walk, you know, you turn the mic off, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to be like calm and not push buttons and be controversial, I would imagine.
Well, that's exactly it. You have to shift gears quickly because you are the Howard Stern guy one minute, and the next minute you're supposed to be a businessman, and that's fine. I think we can all wear both hats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's that hard to do, but sometimes they put you in a bind. sometimes they put you in a thing where, like, I had the guys on from Spinal Tap, and it was right the week that the movie was coming out, and they had their album with them. So they come down. I know all the guys. I've known them for years.
Yeah,
we're doing the show. It's a fantastic show. Those guys are amazing guests, and they're all comedians and hilarious. So it was a great show, and they go, hey, can you play one of our songs from the album? I go, sure. So we play a song. It's about halfway through. I'm playing Big Bottoms.
Right.
I get this call from my program director, take that off now or you're fired. So I got an option. I got the guys in the studio.
Yeah,
they think I'm the kingpin. I all of a sudden have to go, sorry, guys, I have to take the record off in the middle of the record or I'm fired.
Right.
So then I go into the guy's office after that, and that's when the hothead did come out. I cleared his desk. It was like a scene in the movie.
Oh,
I cleared everything off his desk. I go, what the fuck was that? And I grabbed him, and I threw him up against the wall. I was going to kill him.
Wow.
I was going to kill the guy. I go, you motherfucker. I go, if you ever do, and I lost it.
Sure.
Because they had been pushing me to the point where I think anyone would have lost it.
Yeah.
But I look back on it, and I go, why did you do that? I feel like I was an idiot. I am wrong to do that. You don't do that. But I knew better than to do that. But after they had, it was like they were trying to get me to blow up.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, it's unfortunate that the only real way to gain wisdom in this life is to just learn from your fuck-ups.
Yeah,
you're not born with it. You're not born with wisdom.
I know. But I always considered that I was smarter than that. But I think sometimes your temper gets the best of you when you feel that people are picking on you.
Oh, yeah.
And
do you think this was any kind of contract issue, or do you think there was something behind it?
I think there was something to the fact that it was control.
Sure.
It was control. Because I had gotten big to the point where they couldn't control the character.
Mm-hmm.
Me, they could control, but they couldn't control that character.
Yeah.
That character is like Stern. It was like he had the run of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone was talking about me and not the station.
Right.
And everybody was like, they think that I'm out there with three hot chicks all the time. And you know, the truth of the matter is it's really hard work and you're at home trying to write new bits.
Mm-hmm.
You're not out there partying. But they think, you know, wow, he's got all this, you know, he's out there partying every night and he's living the high life. Mm-hmm. And then he comes into here and he's a jerk to us. And that really wasn't true. I was nice to them.
Yeah.
You know me, Donkey. I'm a nice guy.
Absolutely.
And I'm nice to everybody.
One of the nicest guys in the business.
And that's why it hurt my feelings, is that
sure.
I was being nice. And then when they kept badgering me like that, on a control issue, and the other stuff they would do is they would book you in something and not tell you.
Mm.
And, you know, comics are funny about that, because that's all we've got is our little schedule.
Sure.
And
so
you know,
some kind of like events?
Yeah, this girl came
shelf,
up to me and she goes, hey, I'm going to go see you at so-and-so. And I go, what? And she goes, yeah, it says in the newspaper you're going to be here. And I go, are you kidding me? And I look in the newspaper, it's go, Fraser Smith is going to be at this thing. It wasn't a stand-up thing, but I was going to be hosting some charity, big charity event. No one had even asked me.
Wow.
And I go, well, I never gave my permit. I had a gig that night.
Right.
And it was probably some dumb gig, like, you know, I was probably playing some local club or something. But still, in my mind, I'm booked. And you guys never even asked me. So I went into their guy's office. I go, well, what is this? And he goes, well, we've decided to book you for that. And I go, well, don't you have to ask me? No, we don't.
Yeah, you're an indentured servant at that point.
Yeah, you're under contract here. Check your contract. We don't have to ask you.
Wow.
So I go and I do the event. And I was cordial. I did a nice job at the event. I was friendly to everybody. I did my job, as we all do.
Mm-hmm.
I get home, and the next day I go into the office, and they go, these people want to give you an award, a plaque. And I go, I don't want the plaque. I go, I did that under protest. Well, they're here, so you're going to have to do it. It's a photo op. So I take the photo op, you know, and I do the thing. So I'm walking out, and I threw it in the trash. And you heard it go clunk because there was no trash in there. Well, the one day there was the trash.
Empty metal.
Yeah, boom. You know, it's like one of those E.F. Hutton stupid moments. So then I'm suspended for a week.
Boy.
You know, and then I remember my girlfriend's yelling at me, why'd you do that? What an idiot. And I'm just like, oh, you know, that's the part of the business people don't see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and was I wrong? Was I difficult? I don't think I was difficult. Until they started pushing me.
Right.
Then I became difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still on me. You still have to learn a lesson from that.
You have to control the things that you can control, which is how you react to things. And I went through the same thing.
Yeah.
I felt like I was a real nice guy, and then I got pushed to being a total fucking prick. That's just the way I felt about
well,
it.
Well, I tell these stories because I think you probably went through some of that.
Absolutely.
And you know, Dunkey, it's a lot of us do. Mm-hmm. A lot of us do. It's not just you. It's not just me. And it is the nature of the beast. And I think that, you know, you're right. The only way you can learn things sometimes is, you know, to get slammed, yeah. you know, and just hit that hard reality. But and as you get older, you do learn different ways to handle things.
Yeah. Well, that's why I keep telling Chet, do as I say, not yeah. as I do.
In some of those instances, though, even though the outcome wasn't ideal, I think there is something said to stand up for standing up for yourself, though. Like if you just took it from some of those managers and just, you know, kind of put your tail between your legs and kept those jobs, would you have necessarily been happy? Or it might have made you miserable just bottling
right.
it in. Even though you lost your job, you still might have been better off with the in the long run.
You're absolutely right. And that's right, buddy. You know, you do have to take that into consideration, your own feelings and your own self-respect. You know, if people keep using you as a doormat, you don't feel good. And I don't think anybody does. But there's a...
Hear that, Brian?
There's Amen. A certain amount of that. There's a certain amount of that that we all have to deal with. And what else I found out was a lot of big shots have to deal with that.
Sure.
They just get good at biting their lip because they're making millions. So they go, okay, you know what? I'm going to let that one go. Excuse me. But there is some truth to that, that if you let everybody push you around, you're not going to feel good about that. And you also have to live up a little bit to your image on the radio. I mean, my character was a guy who was carefree mm-hmm. and let everything roll off his back and didn't let anybody push him around.
Right.
Because he was doing his thing. Well, then if you're being pushed around constantly behind the scenes, that's not good.
Yeah.
And
that's what's called the slow, gradual deterioration of your soul.
Yeah,
if you let that
yeah,
happen.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can only let a certain amount of that happen. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's a balance. And, you know, also sometimes it's stuff that's just not true. It's like when you were talking about your bit. You were just doing a bit.
Yeah.
So the guy from TMZ takes it out of context. You're not saying comments about people with AIDS.
Exactly.
You're not even really making a comment about...
Well, the way they presented it, it did.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Well, the way they presented it, it's like it's not even a joke. I called my attorney. I told him what happened. He says, tell me the joke verbatim. After the punch, he burst into laughter.
Yeah, it's a
my
funny
fucking
joke.
Attorney. Nobody with who has any sanity that was in that room.
Would have
that's
thought
what,
that.
That's what I can't stand about this whole culture is just you just – it's people that can't perform or can't create anything, and they bond themselves to this industry like a human barnacle, and they take – and they twist things around like that, and it's just – it's so dangerous.
You know what it is, though? It's just old-fashioned jealousy
and
what it boils down to. And the thing is, though, now they've got technology on their side. So jealous people have a better set of ammo.
Yeah, they're definitely armed.
You know, and yeah, and I mean, come on, Tosh wasn't me being supporting rape.
Of course
that was
he's
a
not.
Total...
Yeah, nobody's pro-rape.
I mean, come on,
sake.
Nobody.
If you don't have the audio or the video to back you up now, you can take anything from anybody and change a couple words and make it look like they're evil.
Yeah, but you know, you could still do it in the old days too. It just wasn't as easy. I had an incident with the boss, the same boss, where they said that he was having problems, marital problems, and he wound up divorcing his wife and got remarried. But his current wife at the time was a fan of my show. That was it. I mean, I just barely knew her. But there was a whole thing about Frey's sleeping with the boss's wife. First of all, who would do that?
Yeah.
You'd have to be a complete idiot. So anyway, that wasn't true. But they kept, you know, playing it up, and it got around the hallway, and it was like the gossip mongers, and it was so that didn't help.
Yeah, that's
you know.
Good.
And then there was a Christmas party where I still can't quite figure this out. They were just about ready to do their divorce thing, and she was at the party. And he was at the party, and she came running over. You know how Christmas parties are. She came running over and jumped on me and gave me a kiss. One of those things, right? Where I'm like, And he comes right around the corner, another E.F. Hutton moment,
right.
with his entire entourage of salespeople.
The needle scratch.
So they're all, yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. And there was absolutely nothing going on between me and this girl at all. I barely knew her. So anyway, but that didn't help. So in his mind, okay, all those rumors are true.
Yeah, perception's reality.
And see, then he's got all his little group there, and they're all saying, well, look, did you see what happened there?
Right.
Yeah, that guy. So, you know, it's just been – my career has been filled with these moments of insanity.
I think this is why we get along.
Probably. Probably. Well, I'm a fan of yours anyway, but I do appreciate – I think what I really appreciate about you is you're a very talented guy. And what happens is, though, you didn't fold under some weird pressure. You stayed cool.
I did for a while.
Well, we all do. I folded after the radio thing, too. I was like, what am I going to do? I'm screwed. You know, I couldn't get a job.
Yeah.
I'm really still basically blacklisted in radio from all these things, and I still can't get a job. But
well, that's the thing, that Seacrest has all of them.
That's true. Seacrest has both of our jobs.
TV or radio, but
that son of a bitch.
He's taking everything.
I know,
take a day off, man.
Come on, Seacrest.
On vacation.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, for someone with AIDS,
he sure is working a lot.
He and Magic Johnson
are keeping it going.
From the AIDS.
It's all that money.
Yeah, man. That money will do you. It'll keep you in business. Well, you know what? The thing is, though, you do get around it, and you do get past it if you've got the cojones to hang.
Yeah.
You just have to sort of, and you did. You just said, you know what? I'm going to hang. I'm going to keep going. I know I'm talented. I know I'm good. And eventually you get past it. And in fact, you still have a chance to really bust out and blossom and really get some great stuff going.
I'm working at it.
Yeah, I mean, you're good.
There's something to be said for actually having nothing else to do. Like I said, Chet, nothing else to back, you know. If you don't have anything to fall back on, then what the fuck do you do?
Well,
what are you going to do? I'm 42 years old. What am I going to do?
Well, that's the thing. We've been at it too long. You can't bail and go into insurance.
No.
You know, it's not going to work.
I have those thoughts.
Well, I think everyone does. And I think even people that you would consider to be very successful have those thoughts sometimes because they're on shakier ground than you might think.
Yeah.
You know,
they have a lot more bills.
Well, they do. Yeah. That's the truth. And also, their fortunes can turn on a dime.
Sure.
Their series that's happening right now can be completely out of vogue in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've burned through that money because they've got big bills. And, you know, the smart people learn to keep their overhead down in this business. Because I heard a star. I'm trying to think who it was. Some star was giving that as someone had asked him, "What's your tip for people in show business?" He said his mom had told him a long time ago. She had been in show business. Keep your costs down, even as you're climbing, especially as you're climbing, because if things change and you're on the downslide, you're going to want to have some of that nest egg.
Of course, you want a little parachute. I mean, that was my issue. I just thought once you get to this level, well, you have a publicist. I paid a publicist for like 8 months, $2,500 a month. What the fuck am I paying you for that long? I just didn't know. I didn't know that you don't have to do that.
They were just running out of shit.
Like, oh, there's the bowling charity thing you want to go to them. Like, yeah, sure. Like, what am I doing still spending that money?
And then you find out your publicist is calling TMZ.
That can happen too.
Now, what are some jobs you guys have both considered? Well, you've obviously had many successes in show business, but when you've been in that mindset, like maybe I should do something else, what is something you've each seriously considered?
Well, I wanted to try to keep it in the showbiz realm, so I tried management for...
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I tried for a year. I worked over at Laugh Factory for Jamie, who's my old friend, and... Jamie was nice enough to give me the gig. And you know what? It is something I think I'd really be good at.
Yeah.
Because I get along with the other talent.
Sure.
I love talent, other people's talent, and I think I have a good eye. And I'm sympathetic. And I have a lot of connections.
You're the opposite of every comic in so many ways.
And every manager, too, in a lot of ways. But, you know, I do have a lot of contacts, big contacts, because that's what the radio did provide.
Sure, absolutely.
I knew all the big
everybody.
I know them all. And you know, so I thought, okay, I could probably do this. But what I found was weird there was going into an existing company that has kind of their own way of doing things. I kind of went against the grain again there because I kept trying to kind of just freelance things, just wheel and deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was calling up people and, you know, I kept getting called in the office, Fraze, we love what you're doing, but you're all over the place. You're calling everybody, you know. And they were getting phone calls from these big people calling back there. You know, the head of Fox is calling and, hey, Fraze is my buddy. What's he talking about? He's got some script from one of your guys. You know, they couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that didn't quite work. But I still think there might be something there. But that was my attempt to keep it in the showbiz.
How long ago was that?
That was about 5 years ago. And I also signed a kid that will go nameless who was really talented. And he was 22, And I moved him fast. I got him a show on MTV. I got him his own MTV show. I got him a top agent. I got him into all these clubs. I did everything very quickly. And then he sends me a letter one day saying, I'm dropping you.
Yeah.
From his lawyer. And what they used to drop me, the excuse was that I'd gotten him a gig at one of these clubs, and a manager's not supposed to get gigs.
Yeah, that's the agent's job. There's a big case, and that's the precedent. That's why they always write that in.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know.
It sucks.
So, you know, that broke my heart for.
Sure.
That was like breaking up with a girl. That was like, that's how bad the break. I was like a breakup. I couldn't go out of the house for a week.
Betrayal, yeah.
Yeah, you feel betrayed, and you feel like, well, wait a minute, I did a good job.
Sure.
Who talked to you and told you I didn't?
One of my best friends just had that happen. He had one client and then signed another one, but his one, you know, his only client really just said, I'm not getting enough attention. Gone.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it now. I understand. I was pursued heavily from somebody from Three Arts who knew who I was, but then all of a sudden I got the Aspen Comedy Festival, and then he had a client that was on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, and I just happened to be doing five lines on that, and he was there. And I'm from that day, every day he was calling me. Every day. And I'd been working with my manager, who is my manager now. We had a long separation, but I'm like, this is my manager. He got me this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not going to first of all, I have a contract. I know, I guess that doesn't mean anything to most people, but that's not right.
No, it's
not. I'm not going to do that.
And good for you.
But that's rare.
Good for you. It is rare. And good for you doing that. It really is rare. And contracts apparently don't mean anything. They're so easy to find a little loophole.
Sure.
But it did sour me towards the management thing.
Yeah.
I have thought about it again a little bit, but I'd rather go in a little bit higher level. I maybe, if you could hook up with somebody's company,
mm-hmm.
might be right. So you got some clout.
Right.
You know, then it still doesn't mean people won't pull stuff on you, but it gives you a little more
stability.
Weight. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you can be the guy sitting in the nice desk and the young guy comes in and clears it and tells
you.
I tell you what I just thought of yesterday. While a buddy of mine, I was like, let's go play some golf. And he's like, let's go to Annandale. I'm like, I'm not really on an Annandale budget right now. He's like, you know what? I just had the privilege of joining there. You're my guest. And I'm like, sweet. Well, we got there and there was a tournament and he didn't know it. So we went to one of their sister courses, Oakmont in Glendale. Really old, probably the hardest course I've ever played.
That's
gorgeous.
A tough course. Yeah.
Nobody on it. There are like maybe 10 other people. And he's in real estate. He and his wife were like a team, and she's like, yeah, my wife just sold a house up on that hill on $1.8 million. And I thought, I can see the bench. I can see the bench poster right now. Dunkey's Idle Homes or something. How do I whore out what I, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I have those thoughts. So that's what I just thought yesterday.
Yeah. The thoughts are always good when the basis of your success is, how do I whore something out?
Well, you can still use.
It's like, I want to fucking have money again when you're playing on a country club like that. You know what I mean? I don't want to go back to a fucking Muni and playing back of a five-some ball field with umbrellas and
you won't
not
get
a cloud
mad
in the sky.
At me saying this. But this is something I remember when I first came here, and we're not on the podcast. We're just having a conversation about what you might do, and you legitimately had the thought in your head, maybe I'll just be a man nanny. Do you remember talking about this?
I absolutely do, and that's still on the table.
Well, it's funny because
still on the table.
Funny to be.
the thing about the real estate guys, you can still use your headshot for the bench
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
But
I'll just get the cheesiest one I have.
Yeah, man.
The one with
Celebrity
the shorts.
Club.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but you know, it's funny you say the thing about the Manny. The one of the comics. I was talking to this weekend at Comedy and Magic has started a dog walking.
Oh, really?
Business. Yeah.
Great.
Can make a lot of money doing
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what he said. He goes, I'm making big bank on this. And but then he told me about an incident with another guy walking a pit bull that was kind of weird. But but it was, you know, it's weird what comics come up with to make dough.
I might steal that idea, Dunkey's dog walking.
Yeah, there you go.
Chat, you in? You just follow behind
Sounds
us.
Terrible.
Follow behind us with a shovel.
Nope. Draw the line there.
Part of the problem is, though, that we don't have a resume anymore. I used to have a resume of other jobs when I was younger. But, you know, but when we've done this for 20 years,
there's nothing on the res. No.
So, no, it's hard to get another gig.
Catering. There's always catering.
Yeah. No.
Not. I have a real resume. That just means I haven't made it in comedy. By any means.
Look at me.
So I'm in that fork right now where it's like, oh, I have to get a non-entertainment job to stay out here and pursue entertainment.
Well, that's what you should be.
Yeah,
you
unfortunately. Be and the key there is to find something that's cool. You know, if you can find something where it's not too big of a headache, then it's okay.
Hey, you know. I told them that, you know, Greg Barrett, myself, Josh Wolf, we all catered El Cholo Catering. I said, would you care for another chimichanga, sir? Nobody knows who the fuck you are.
Have those degrees. Do it. This is the time to do it. If I'm going to work, it'll be an education.
These degrees matter.
They do an education.
You're adorable. Oh, the youth.
Thank you.
There's nothing wrong with pushing chimichangas.
No. I served some very talented people chimichangas. But it is. Arthur Fonzarelli.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Henry Winkler. And then years later, I worked with him.
Isn't that great?
On a pilot.
Did he remember you?
No, I didn't bring it
up. Best chimichanga he ever had.
I didn't bring it up.
What if he said, you got any more chimichangas?
Why is catering on
set? I'm out of that line of work. Why are you wearing a Mexican hat? Why are you wearing a sombrero?
You can always go back. Maybe that would be something you could pitch, Brian, a show where you just
me
go
going back
and
doing catering?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That'd be a good 2-minute YouTube video.
Dining with Dunkey.
There you go.
I think it's time for questions, Chet Wild.
Time for questions.
Questions.
Lead them in.
We modified them a little.
So I'm just worried. I'm worried about my
We're
meter.
Gonna wrap this up tight. Okay. We're gonna wrap it up tight, Frasch.
Because that meter.
We just end up with a couple quick questions.
Brian just got some residuals, so if you get a ticket, I'm sure he can pay.
Yeah, well, he's got the big money on now. I know.
Final questions. What is the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you? What is – it's not worst thing. What did we change it to? Most embarrassing thing?
Embarrassing.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
What's the worst thing you've ever done? What's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you? And or what's the best thing that's ever happened to you? Any combination or just one of them.
One, two, three, whatever. Quick. You can be funny. You can be deep. You can be dark.
The worst thing the most embarrassing thing that ever happened. You mean besides this show?
Hey,
no,
there it is.
Just kidding.
That's a popular response.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it might have been that thing where the boss's wife wrapped her legs
yeah,
around
that's
me.
A good one.
That was pretty bad. I mean, that kind of cost
timing
me a job
everything.
And everything else. And, oh, God. What were the other question?
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Worst thing I've ever done. Wow. I didn't accidentally. I cut someone out of a job one time where I really didn't need to.
Mm.
I'll tell you what I did. This other guy was applying for a job. He was basically applying for the job I was on the radio. And I knew the guy was pretty good, so I hid his tape.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't do that again today.
Yeah.
But I did it then.
His name was Howard Stern.
I wish it would have been. Please say it was the Brian
but that
Seacrest.
Was pretty
let's
bad,
go back
right?
In time
that's not a good thing
tape.
To do.
And then best thing that's ever happened to you.
Let's leave on a
the
happy
best
note.
Best thing that ever happened to me would be doing this show.
Yes. Look at that.
There it is.
With Chet and Dunkey.
This is
the worst and best thing.
Those are the two best things.
Yeah. When are you at the Magic Club next? We'll come
Magic
out
Magic Club,
you.
I'm not sure.
Let's do some plugs. What do you got coming up?
Well, I've got
websites,
I'm opening
Twitter,
for Cat Williams tonight at the Ice House.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be fun. I am playing at Ace's Comedy Club out in Temecula.
Oh, you'll have fun? You've been down there?
No,
good time.
I haven't. Is that a nice club?
Yeah, great guy. Looks Rocky, great guy.
Rocky.
Huge room.
Is it?
Really nice room.
He's a cool guy. I'm down there this week. And then I'm in La Jolla. At the Comedy Store the week after. And I'm starting a web series called Calabasas.
Awesome.
Yeah. This is a pretty funny little piece, I think. And I'm starting to shoot that next week.
And where will we look for that?
That should be on the Laugh Factory YouTube channel.
Fantastic. Twitter?
Twitter. I'm on Twitter.
All right.
I don't know what my handle is. It's at Frasier Comedy.
There you go.
Yeah.
We'll put it all up on the website.
All right, cool.
We'll do it.
Guys, I enjoyed it.
Thank
great
you
to
so
see
much,
you both. Frasier. You're both
it's
awesome.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. We'll catch you around soon.
Go all Sabres. Right.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Quite stylish. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do? Frasier has left the building.